All right, my friends, another episode of the Build Show podcast. I'm your host, Matt Reisinger. And if you don't know me, I'm a contractor here in Austin, Texas. And today's topic is just me solo. It's going to be a little bit therapy session for me. And I suspect if you're a builder or if you are listening to this and you're currently building a house, you're probably going to recognize a few things that I say that resonate with you. I'm going to be talking today specifically about the building climate and some of the hassles, frustrations, and roadblocks that I've had at this point. You know, we're recording this in September 2021, that honestly, in my 27, 28 years of construction, I've never faced before. Today's build show, all about the supply chain, materials, and labor, and what we're facing out there today. From the Rockwell Studios, let's get going. All right, guys, so today's topic, it's kind of an all-encompassing topic, and to be honest, this is a little bit of therapy for me to kind of get this off my chest. It's not the thing that I talk about, or it's not the topic that's easy to talk about in social media or on a YouTube video, but I think in a podcast, I can kind of air my company's dirty laundry, so to speak. And if you're a builder, remodeler, GC listening to this, I have a feeling you might be experiencing some of these same issues. And what I'm really talking about on this episode is the extra frustration level of being a builder in this climate in 2021, when I expected us to be kind of post-COVID at this period of time, and yet things are crazy. So the reason why I'm talking about this is it seems like in the last week or two, everyone I talk to who's outside of the industry, every time I see them, they go, "Hey, Matt, how's it going? You must love this climate where things are so busy that you are turning down jobs right and left. You must be making money hand over fist." And, you know, how do you tell the story of this climate we're in when you're talking to your dentist or to your, you know, your neighbor or somebody who's not in the industry? It's really hard to explain. But if you're listening to this, my assumption is you're probably a pro like me. You probably are experiencing some of these same issues where, yes, our phone has rung a ton this year with new projects. We've got a bunch of new opportunities in the pipeline. But finishing our completed jobs and coming through in our commitments that we've given past clients is honestly the hardest thing I've ever dealt with, probably in the 27 years I've been in business. And the climate we're in is such a weird climate that it's just incredibly difficult to come through on my promises to my clients. And there's a number of reasons for that, and that's what I'm going to kind of break down on this podcast a little bit. And this might seem like it's a little bit of an excuse podcast, but honestly, I'm hoping that you can hopefully learn some things from what I've done to manage my jobs or my clients' expectations better through some really weird times. So let's first talk about materials and material suppliers. I think you guys have known that I've been building my personal house, and that's been amazing. And I've had a lot of people who have helped me a ton on my house. And I've had, honestly, a lot of material suppliers that have been very generous in giving me materials at a discount or sometimes even free for my house. But what's been incredibly difficult is that those materials, whether they're at a discount or not, have not come in any sort of time frame like you would expect. So for instance, and I'm not going to throw out any names here to protect the innocent, because I think this is really across the board, but for instance, appliances. I can think of my house plus three or four houses that we have under construction where we've ordered appliances in the last, 9 months, let's call it. And literally every appliance pack that we've ordered has had a delivery date for those appliances months and months out, at least three times longer than what we're used to experience. But then there's always some specific items, especially dishwashers and washers and dryers for some reason, that are even further out. So for instance, when I ordered my appliances back in February, I guess it was, you know, normally I'd expect that they would be ready in April or May. Most of the time we wouldn't order appliances until about the time that we've ordered our cabinets, or maybe slightly after that, so we can make sure that the appliance models have stayed the same. That's really important to do. And all my appliances are in, but my dishwasher. And my dishwasher is still not slated to come for another 30 days. Now, I did order a pretty popular model, but at the same time, gosh, I mean, we're talking about 7, maybe 8 months delivery period from the time of order till the time that I'm going to take possession of that appliance that I've ordered. And that's really what I'm hearing across the board on lots and lots of different manufacturers. And my assumption is that there's a bunch of different reasons for that. But man, that really puts a crimp in things, such that we're ordering sometimes appliances a year out or other items a year out. And then we're trying to figure out, okay, well, how do we either store them at the supplier's warehouse, or if they won't store them for that extra length of time, how are we going to store them in a way that's going to be both safe and accessible for our clients? You know, I've got a decent sized studio warehouse office space. We're probably at, 7,500, 8,000 square feet of space here. And almost half of that is storage space, where we've been stockpiling materials for our jobs, such that, man, it's really hard to get through that storage space of mine, which is probably 3,500 square feet, because we just have so much stacked up there, knowing that it was going to be a hassle ordering that ahead. The other thing that's been really interesting that I've really felt the pinch on, even in the short term, on both my house and some of our jobs, is that material suppliers, even if they say they have it, if they're going to have it, and now I'm thinking about more commodity type items, they don't necessarily have it. So for instance, we're trying to get some tile backer on one of our projects for that tile job to proceed forward. And every other year in the 27 years I've been in business, we would go to the local center where that's sold, either a home center or a tile supply store, and it would be on the shelf. And in today's market, not only is not on the shelf, but they don't know exactly when that shipment's coming. And when that shipment does come, it's sold out almost immediately. And that has been so frustrating to think about, not just special order things taking a long time, but just normal everyday items that are, kind of quote unquote standard building supplies to be not available. I know I've gotten a bunch of messages from some of my builder friends asking if I could help with their desire to get XYZ products because maybe I have a relationship with that manufacturer. And of course, I'm not able to do that because I can't even get them for my jobs necessarily. But that's just the climate we seem to be in when it comes to a material side. And then let's talk labor, on the labor side of things. I generally have been working on cost plus jobs for the last, 10 years or so, which means that my company only makes fee. Frankly, I only get paid based on the volume of construction that goes out the door plus that fee. That's the plus part. And so, you know, for instance, on an average job, we're typically trying to move about $150,000 to maybe $250,000 worth of progress on that job on a monthly basis. That's manpower, materials, everything. So, you know, when we kind of look at our jobs and look at our profitability for the year and whether we're going to make our plan, we're generally, depending on the size of the job and the type of job, we're thinking 150 to 250,000 of movement in process every month so that we can charge fee on that. And that's, again, how we get paid. So if you think about material shortages, if those materials aren't there, number one, I can't bill for them. But then number two, the labor is maybe not ready because the materials aren't there. And the other thing that we do as a company is we don't typically bid things out to any number of bidders. We usually have subcontractors that we've worked with for a long, long time. And we are their A player builder. You know, for instance, my electrician is a relatively small outfit. He's a 4-man team, including the boss and 3 guys. And he works really almost exclusively for me. And I'm trying to think if it's one or two, probably let's say 2 other builders. Well, I haven't grown or gotten any particularly bigger in the last couple of years. We've kind of maintained the same volume that we've done over the years. But we've got, you know, maybe one extra job going. But the other buildings he's worked with have taken on additional work. And so even though he's not out to the general public and working for multiple people, he's dealing with, you know, being 30 or 40% busier than what he's normally used to being busy. And again, this is only for two or three builder clients. So this isn't, you know, a giant company that's trying to expand and grow, which means that when I need him on the job, most of the time in the past, when I scheduled him 2 or 3 weeks out on the job, when I knew things would be ready, it was generally no problem. I might wait a few days, but not very much longer. But in today's market, that really has been a damper for me. And then other trades, I'm thinking, I don't want to mention the trade's name, but another trade of mine is a phase where I really only have one good subcontractor in that phase. And he's a, I would consider him a medium-sized shop. You know, he's got probably 15 tradesmen that work for him. Gosh, he is just absolutely swamped with other business besides mine, such that I've got a really big job that's been on the schedule for months and months, and he's stuck trying to finish up some other big jobs that he's got with other builders. And he's telling me when normally, you know, we would touch base a few months, a few weeks out before the job and verify his start date. He's telling me things like, gosh, you know, I know I was slated to start mid-September, but I'm not sure I'm going to be able to be there even in October. It may not even be until November till I can start that job. And then when he does start, he's got backordered parts and pieces from various manufacturers such that he's only getting the job, let's say, 80% complete, and then he's waiting for a few parts. And that doesn't seem like that big a deal, but when you think about inspections and that process that happens, that means that you know, we might have a job that's 80 or 90% done, but we're waiting on a couple things before we can get that job done, which means we can't get an inspection on that, which means we can't go on to the next phase of construction. And this is really, gosh, I don't know if you can hear it in my voice. This is what's really been so difficult. Is here I've got tradesmen that have worked for me, some of them for more than a decade, that are great people, trusted people that, you know, when they tell me things, they make it happen. And that's honestly been a big litmus test for me over the years. If a tradesman is telling me things and making them happen, making me look good in front of my clients, well, then I'm going to continue working with them because, you know, I want my clients to feel like when I say something is going to happen, that it actually is going to happen. So, you know, we're talking about tradesmen that I've been working with for over a decade that have really come through for me. They're not able to come through for various reasons on their own part, which means now my promises to my clients are not happening. And then here's the part that really kicks me, and probably you as well, through all this, is that in a time when, yes, we're as busy as we possibly could be, and people are saying, gosh, you must be killing it, Matt. You know, you're making all this money. In reality, no, my jobs are probably, all my billings are down probably somewhere between 30 and maybe as much as 50% compared to where we expected them to be, which means that I'm billing 30 to 50% less fee than I should be. And in the end, you know, my company probably over the course of this year, this 2021, I suspect we'll be down at least 25% in overall profitability, overall billings. And how do you manage that as a builder? That's been really difficult. I mean, my fixed costs are there every month, whether I want them or not. You know, truck payments, rent payments, utility payments, people's salaries, all those things go on, whether you're making a giant amount of profit or a trickle of profit. So this is the part that's really been difficult for me. And again, I don't know that I've got any great solutions, but I suspect that if you're also a builder, you're experiencing some of these same things as well. But the hard part, and the part that I'm really struggling with, is how do I go back to clients and end up in a position where they really feel like I did it for them and we did the best that we could, when so many clients who, you know, usually our jobs are taking 18 to maybe as much as 24 months or more. Now those jobs are 30, 40% longer to build because of this crazy era we're in. How do I go back to them and help them to understand this without just sounding like, oh, we're using the pandemic as a excuse for being slow or being late? When ultimately I want to say, look, this hurts my bottom line hugely. And not only am I incentivized to build your house quicker because then I do better on the project, I can only charge so much fee. But when it takes me that much longer to do it, it's brutal. It'd be like if you went to Jiffy Lube and instead of changing your oil in 10 minutes, it took them 10 hours all day long to change your oil. Would Jiffy Lube make any money on that oil change? No, of course they wouldn't. They need to keep that business flowing and keep those trucks and manpower and oil changes happening, and the same's happening for me right now. As kind of a random side note, I've got a personal vehicle issue in that I wrecked my wife's Suburban earlier this year. Not really talked about this on camera before, and this isn't necessarily about the podcast, but I bought my wife, we got a new Suburban this year, and we bought one with a bigger engine so that I could pool my RV. And we had an amazing trip in the spring with our RV, but then when we were thinking about taking a summertime trip with our RV, we wanted to take bikes and generator and everything with us on the back of the RV. Sorry for the side note, but this, trust me, this is an interesting story. So I load everything on the RV, and a builder buddy of mine says, hey, let's figure out what the weight on the tongue is, because I was worried about trailer sway issues. And when I had it loaded up one time like that before, I'd had some pretty good trailer sway. It scared the heck out of me. So I load up our relatively new Suburban. At this point, it's only, you know, 4 months old, let's say. I pull my my Lance Camper. I have a bike rack and several bikes and a generator on the back. And I'm on the highway going north of town to the trucking scales where I can weigh it all and figure out my tongue weight, my weight on the trailer, all these things. And I end up having ridiculous trailer sway, so much so that my trailer brake controller on my Suburban, it does have the integrated brake controller, I'm squeezing that thing for all it's worth, and my sway just keeps getting worse and worse. And at some point, I'm swaying so much, and I have a, and I do have an anti-sway bar on too, which kind of locks down on top of the hitch. I'm thinking, oh Lord, I'm gonna flip over. And I'm praying, God, help me. And I swear it was an angel that threw my truck, my Suburban, and my trailer into a guardrail so that I didn't end up flipping over. But in turn, what happened was, and it, here's where the part of the story comes back here, I did $30,000 worth of damage to my Suburban, and it's taken the body shop. They've had it for going on 3 months now, and it's not out of the shop. It's not fixed yet. And I don't think I want a Suburban that's had that kind of damage to stay in my family. So I'm going to probably sell it to CarMax or somebody like that. And I've been thinking about ordering and or buying a new Suburban. So I've been paying attention to what's happening at the Chevy dealer. And if you drive by, I suspect this is true in your town too, any Chevy dealer in the nation, there is not a single Suburban or Tahoe on the lot. I know this is true for Austin, Texas. I'm assuming it's true for you as well, considering they're made in Dallas and Arlington, just 4 hour drive north of here. There's not a single one to be had. So I call the fleet guy, because we bought a bunch of Chevy trucks for the company over the years. I call the fleet guy and he's like, yeah, trucks are ridiculous, and Chevy cars in general. At the factory, they're all built, but they're missing a part or two, mostly computer chips, but there are some other parts as well. And so we can't ship them out until we get that. And that's the big reason on the holdup. So if you find one that you like, you can order it, but just know that it's probably going to take 9 months, maybe even as long as a year, for me to fulfill that order on the one that you want. And in the meantime, they're taking care of that backlog. If you multiply that same vehicle story to the home building industry, that's exactly what's happening, I assume, throughout all of America. And again, this is a really hard topic to talk about on social media or YouTube, but I think the podcast is the right spot. I wish that you guys could sit down next to me and tell me your stories. But unfortunately, the podcast is a one-way episode, isn't it? I would love to know what the right way is to inform as we go through, especially when it comes to my clients, and how do I help them to understand the climate we're in, but also feel like, hey, we're in this together. I'm going to do everything I can. I'm going to find every alternative that I can. I'm going to do everything I can to push your project forward and to make good on those promises that I made prior to knowing what was going to happen to me in this part of the world. But man, it's incredibly difficult. And just at lunchtime today, I had a really interesting conversation with an old builder friend of mine, a builder that's been building 42 years. And he was telling me a recession building story. He built a house that was a very expensive multi-million dollar house that right before the recession hit, like in early 2007, maybe late 2006, he got this house under contract. And it was a very large, very complicated build. He knew it was going to be at least a 2.5 year build. You know, we're talking about like a 15 to 20,000 square foot house. Very expensive. Got under contract as a cost plus build. And then the recession hit. Well, the client was wise enough and the builder was wise enough to have put the entire build cost into a bank account so that it was fully funded. There was no risk of running out of money, let's say. And the client didn't pull back on the project or pull the plug. They moved forward on the job. But the builder was telling me, you know, this builder has been around the block a few times. The market that we're in now is almost the polar opposite of that time. You know, in that time in 2007, 2008, 2009, in the height of the recession, when he's building a multi-million dollar house, subcontractors are absolutely sitting at home with nothing to do. No one has any money to do anything. No one's doing any projects. And here he has a very large bucket of money from the client and the mantra to build a very nice, very large house. He had subs that would go to work and they would basically say, hey, whatever you want to pay me works. I'll be there. I want to be there. I'll be there tomorrow. When do you need it? I'll be there. Let's make it happen. And today's market's almost the exact opposite, where subs are saying, gosh, I'm really expensive. Or, you know, if you think about one particular sub that I've heard from a wide range of people right now that's ridiculous is pool builders. You know, pool builders, if you think about it, they build for new homes, they build on remodels, but they also build for whoever wants a pool added to their backyard. Pool builders are so busy that I regularly get messages from people that say, hey, I've called 5 pool builders in this area. No one will call me back. You know, can you give me the name of your guy? I don't even want it tomorrow. I just want to be on the list, and I can't even get on the list. Wade Paquin, my buddy up in Rhode Island, was telling me a pool builder story where he had a buddy of his that literally bought a suitcase of money into a pool builder's office and said, here's a giant deposit in cash. I want to be on your list. And the pool builder said, look, I'm so busy and I'm so far out on my current list of clients and projects, I won't even take your suitcase full of money as a deposit that you're trying to put on my desk. If you multiply that by all the other trades out there, it's just an absolutely nutty time. And, you know, I never want to say, hey, wait to build your house. But I've actually said that to a few people of late. And there are some things that have gotten better. So, for instance, lumber has gotten a lot better cost-wise compared to where it was not that long ago, where prices were sky high, you know, 3x what they should be. OSB zip sheathing, it was going for like $50 to $75 a sheet. It's back down. You know, OSB is a little bit more than where I'd like to see it, but it's back down to, let's say, $20 a sheet these days or slightly under that. So at least we've seen a correction in one part of the market. But what's it going to take to see kind of normalized pricing again and normalized delivery times? I mean, this is stuff that I had some semblance of this happening when COVID hit, but just it's so far out of my normal experience in my, you know, 2.5 decades of building that I just I did not foresee it to the depth that we've seen. And I think it's really interesting as we're coming into 2022. It's going to be really interesting to see what happens. Is the market going to continue to be this frothy in 2022? Are we going to see some amount of cooling in the amount of demand out there for housing, for remodeling, for pools, for renovation, for people nesting into their spaces and investing into their spaces? It's going to be really interesting. All right, guys. Anyways, this was, as I mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, this was part therapy for me. Hopefully it's been a little part therapy for you as well to know that your experiences, whether you're in, Rhode Island or Flint, Michigan or Detroit or Salt Lake or California, I suspect you're probably running into these same issues that I am. And so anyways, I wish you guys the best. Thank you so much for listening to my podcast. We've got some great new content and some great new guests that are lined up for the future. But today, a little one-on-one time with Matt Reisinger. Guys, if you're not currently a podcast subscriber, there'll be a link below if you're watching this. We publish this on buildshownetwork.com, so you can watch the audio, or pardon me, the video version of this if you're interested. We're also publishing on iTunes and all the major stations. But we publish every single Friday, and this is always an in-depth time where we can spend a little bit more time than just the YouTube's time. And, you know, YouTube videos are some of mine are pretty long. I must admit, I did a 30-minute roofing video not too long ago that's even done well, shockingly, that it's been that long. But this podcast is my time to take 20 to 30, maybe as long as 40 minutes with you, and really go deep into a particular topic. So, with that being said, guys, follow me on Twitter or Instagram. Otherwise, we'll see you next time on the Build Show podcast.